right, we'll get back to the Locky talk a little bit later on. Dude.
I thought you were going to say Ja.
Ja. But there's some serious Chicago news in the meantime that we need to get to. And we brought in our law enforcement editor of the Rokan show with Anna DeVlantis, Sergeant Pete. And I got an issue here. I don't know what to make of what I'm seeing anymore. And maybe you're with me, because how many years were you on the job?
38.
38 years. So my guess is that there's a lot here that is confounding to you as well.
Yes.
Okay. Now, we have a situation where it looks like the police superintendent is going to move on the seven police officers who were around Jason Van Dyke, who testified or wrote in reports their perspective of the incident that occurred that cost Laquan McDonald his life. And now those guys are going to get fired. And what is interesting about this is it's sort of like, you know, it's all in the eye of the beholder in some respects here.
Yes.
In terms of what they saw. And did Laquan McDonald lunge at a police officer? No, I wouldn't use the word lunge. And I think it's a curious thing to see in a police report. But was he in fact moving, in your estimation, was the police officer justified in firing the first shot, not the subsequent 15?
If you look at the tape and you do it slowly, you see Laquan takes a sort of a half step to the left. And at that point,
in the direction of the police.
Of the officer. Now, he then may take that, perceive that as a threat, and he fires his weapon. The 7 or 8 or 10 other policemen that are there, they have different perspective, different sight lines, and some of them can be blocked by a car or the frame of a car. Mm-hmm. So you don't know what they saw. In shootings that I handle, what I would do is I take the shooter and his partner, I put them in the car and say, okay, write down what you remember from the beginning, during the shooting, and afterwards, and get it right. You don't need to have people to step in and coach. Now, if I have this many witnesses and I'm a supervisor on the scene, and there has to be a sergeant on the scene, there's a lieutenant, there's a street deputy that comes all the time, there's a shooting. Mm-hmm. At what point, what do they say to these guys? Do they say everybody write the same thing? Do they instruct them to do something like that? Do they instruct them to boilerplate?
Have you seen that in your career?
I've seen guys try to boilerplate reports, and I just say, well, that's not going to work. You know, you each got to write your own report, and you can't just write one report and copy it 9 times and sign it. Mm-hmm. I want you to tell me what you saw, because any investigator or interrogator worth the salt, there's always a difference. You know, different people will say they saw different things, and some people will say they saw something they never saw. They were behind the building, but they heard it, and they looked around the corner. So that to me is the troubling part. What did they actually see? Number two, what about the sergeant and lieutenant? Wouldn't they gather the people together and say, all right, what did you see? How did you see it? Now, if those people directed these officers to make these reports, and there are violations of what we call Rule 14, a false official report, whether written or oral, now you've got a problem, because there could be a conspiracy that was orchestrated by somebody else. I don't like the point that Johnson has got to take the
superintendent.
The superintendent, yeah, has to deal with the 7 or 8 policemen. But what about, so far, the chief of detective, Escalante, he quit. The McNaughton, the deputy chief, he quit. There was a lieutenant that quit that was in the chain of command of this. Mm-hmm. As this went up the chain, you have people that are looking at this tape, and somehow, somewhere, somebody's got to say, wait a minute, this doesn't jive.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like, as you said, most of the senior officers who should have seen this and done something are no longer with the police department anymore. The 5 people who were in the room reviewing it with then-superintendent, Superintendent McCarthy, all of them are no longer with the police department, including Superintendent McCarthy. So, you know, if you look at this and say, hey, let's just fire these 7 officers and we're okay, you're not okay, I would think. The system needs to be the system needs to be resolved in other ways. You need to have real change, and that's just one sign of it, I think, just
there,
firing
there
those
have,
officers.
We have accountability and culpability by their supervisors. You know, you're a supervisor because you're supposed to be able to manage these men. And to manage them, you have to get the facts and the evidence and everything gathered and be truthful. Now, this is going to hurt Van Dyke's criminal case,
right?
Because these policemen are not going to be able to be called as witnesses if their character is brought into question. So who orchestrated this, if it was orchestrated, and who was behind letting this go? At some point, somebody at the upper level should have said, hold on a minute, there's something wrong here. Let's go back and let's talk with these officers. I mean, the one step the guy takes a little to the left.
Right. Is directly in front. Okay. He's directly in front of the officer here.
Right.
And so Laquan McDonald is approaching the officers. And this is something, people have all seen this tape now, but if you haven't seen the tape, or if you want to go look at the tape again, there is a very important point. The tape that we all see is from a dash cam in a squad car. And that squad car, or SUV, is moving at the time that it's taking this video. It's moving very slowly, but it is moving. So the perspective changes a little bit. You have to watch for that. There is a yellow line. There's a dotted yellow line that you keep your eyes on when you're watching the tape. And Laquan McDonald starts on the right side of that line. The police officers are on the left side of that line. At one moment, he does cross the line right before that shot is fired. And that, which does indicate a movement toward the police. And because that vehicle camera is moving, it doesn't seem as dramatic of a move perspectively. But if you look at it, you do see it's clear that he has now moved across that line. And he has a knife deployed in his hand.
So excellent. Very good point.
And it's true. The court will need to decide if that was justified or not. But, I mean, when you look at the crime here, too, is the cover-up and this whole lack of transparency within the department. Some of those officers said in their reports that he rose from the ground, lunging again at the officers with that knife. Which you clearly know
did not happen.
You look at that video.
Correct.
And some of the other facts that were reported clearly did not happen. And so that's where you start losing faith in the police force to be able to accurately communicate to the citizens about what happened at the scene.
You are right about that.
If you want transparency and you want everything done right, then show everything right, like they did in Milwaukee. Right after the shooting, this guy had a body cam. They showed everything. They should have showed this thing immediately, not 13 months later.
It didn't stop the riots.
Right. Okay. See, that's the crazy thing here. And last night, by the way, when the police released the video of two nights ago where the police officer was grazed wound to his face in the shooting on the south side, that by the train tracks, they have to release that tape immediately because then you get to see what Chicago police officers deal with on a regular basis.
Unfortunately,
when shots
it's too
are fired.
Regular.
Yeah.
No, it's way too regular.
You know, it used to be, you know, growing up in this town, now I'm going to start, you know, back in my day. Right, I'm like doing that. But, you know, you would talk to cops, you'd say, you know, have you ever pulled your weapon? They go, no, I never, you know, guys have been on the job
That's
20
true.
Years. And
yeah.
They would say, no, I never pulled my weapon. I don't know of a single cop now who hasn't pulled his weapon at some point.
Or hasn't been shot at or heard fire in the vicinity.
The change from when I was on to the period that I've been off. And some of these people that work for me and with me are now big bosses on this police department. The change is completely 180 degrees now. Police now feel that they are, every time they do something, they're scrutinized. And
right. You
know what? There's nothing wrong with being scrutinized. But I said to Anna before, O.W. Wilson, when he was brought in during a babbling burglar scandal from the 20th District, he said discipline.
That was in the 1960s.
Right. Discipline should be used to educate, not to punish. We've gotten away from that. If you make a mistake, you make a mistake. When you do your show and you're going to interview somebody, you have a staff and you all get together and you sit down and you go over what you want to talk about and you check your facts. That's what should have been done in this case. And what happened was everybody just kept passing it to the next guy until finally it got lost. And then when you get to such a point, there's no pulling it back. It's much easier to defend the truth than it is a lie.
So, speaking of that, so now we move on to this this case that where the video was released of Paul O'Neill, the alleged carjacker, car thief, right? Because he was in driver of a stolen car.
Right.
I think it's the only thing we can
Jaguar.
Actually. That's
right.
That's the only thing that we can say that it would be accurate. Driver of a stolen car tries to elude police. That's clear from the video. He almost does strike an officer with the car, but what we have now is you saw the police react by shooting at him, shooting in the car. That's apparently no longer a rule. That is a rule that they shouldn't. It's no longer protocol for police officers to shoot at a vehicle. The vehicle is the single issue here. They don't think that there's
unless it's an imminent threat to your safety or your partner's
right.
safety.
Because once the car is past them and the partner's okay, actually the one of the police officers who was shooting. It's more dangerous to his officer, to his partner at that point, because he was shooting in the direction of the partner.
In the direction of his partner and a car down the block. That's
right.
Another squad car.
Now, those guys who came out, let's talk about this situation. How jammed up are these guys? Because the one officer who appears to have been the one who fired the fatal shot, does shoot, according to the release of the information yesterday, does shoot him in the back. The fatal shot came from the back. Now, the question is this. In some cases, guys are spun around by the first shot, right? If more than
yes.
one shot is fired. And so therefore, getting shot in the back does not necessarily mean that he was shot in the back trying to elude. But he was unarmed. And the officers did believe at the time that the guy who fired the fatal shot believed that Paul O'Neill had shot at them because they perceived fire on them because it was from another police officer.
Right. They heard gunshots.
Right.
Usually, most of the time, police will say they're shooting at us, they fired at us, they shot at us, they hit our car. And in this instance, as Mr. O'Neill's, gets over the fence and the one guy goes over the fence, the other guy can't make it over the fence, and then you hear a few shots. You have to think what's going through this guy's mind, that these people were shooting at him, and he's got in his head that this guy might have a gun. If he doesn't see his hand, he has to make a split-second decision, 1/100th of a second.
Right.
I mean, between a gold and a silver medal, all right? But this guy's got to make a decision for his life, and he made the decision to shoot. And then at the end, you hear him say, they were shooting at us, right? They did fire shots.
Right.
And he doesn't know at this point that the shots that he heard were from two officers a block away.
Right.
And all he knows is that I'm in my car, I'm hit by a 2,500-pound Jaguar.
You don't know where the shots are coming
from. It's an
from.
Aggravated assault right off the bat. And then the guy bolts. And, if the guy's holding his pants up because they're too low or whatever, this hand is gone. So you don't know what's in that hand. I'm not going to want, and I wouldn't want anybody that worked for me, to let this guy turn around and have the first shot.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got a defensible position.
You do think the police officer has a legally defensible position?
Yes, I do. I think the officer that fired the fatal shot, in my opinion, has a defensible position.
In a criminal sense. In a civil sense, probably
right,
not.
Probably
right?
not, right.
Yeah, but in a criminal sense.
The burden of proof is much more.
Yeah.
He's got to go on, and the tape clearly shows, was he shooting at us? Did they shoot at us? Because nobody informed him, he's not shooting, we're shooting.
Although the one police officer does into his radio say, shots fired by police. Now, whether the officer that did the shooting was able to hear that transmission is unclear.
In the heat of the moment, you're flying out of the car and you got a radio on your shoulder and guys are screaming. It's hard to hear what that radio is saying.
Yeah. Sure.
And you have people talking over each other on a radio.
Right. Mm-hmm. All right. Petey, thank you very much. Appreciate
thank
your
you.
Time, sir. I don't know. Again, I don't know what to make of any of this.
Well, you wonder if the moves that are being made are actually, are they optics, or are we really moving toward a more transparent police department that is following the rules more often? I think that's the question.
I guess the question is, how do cops go out and do their jobs and feel
the
that they are secure in doing and having to make those split second decisions because that's what they're called on, or are they just sent out there to be targets?
Yes,
for bad guys?
And what we're missing in the entire background of this, the O'Neill shooting that just occurred.
Mm-hmm.
That makes front page news, but 9 people get murdered on a Monday,
right.
or 10 people getting shot on a weekend and 50 wounded. That's taken off the news. People don't realize how many people there's 400 and some people murdered in this city already. There's over 3,000 shot already. Right. And we're in the middle of August.
I know.
Yeah. And it's, that's the issue. It comes 2,500 off the headlines because the police take the headlines.
Yeah. It's an excellent point. Thank you, Sergeant. Right now, hold on. Before we get to the break, we've got to Violetta. Judy has some breaking Lochte news.
Yes, Ryan. I think you need to know that Globo News is reporting that Rio police just indicted you.
No.
And James Fagan for false reporting of a crime.
That is now, bogus.
That is only Global News that's reporting that at this moment, but I thought you'd want to know that.
Bro.
Mm-hmm. Dude.
Bro.
We got
you might
go,
need to
man.
Go into hiding.
Let's get out of here, brah.
I think he is in hiding because he's in the United States.
Dye your hair again.
They'll never
go.
They'll
good never one. Go. Good one. Oh, I got to do that. All right.